Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Many people enjoy a nice, cold, soft drink on a hot day. But a new study finds that drinking too many soft drinks may increase aggressive behavior in children. We will have that report later in the program. But first, we bring you a story on new findings about tobacco smoking. A report earlier this year from the United States Surgeon General finds that smoking tobacco is even deadlier than had been known. The report says smoking causes birth defects, a leading cause of death among babies. It also links smoking to cancer of the liver and colon, diabetes, and other diseases. The first U.S. Surgeon General's report on tobacco and health was released in 1964. It was the first scientific report to link smoking with lung cancer and heart disease. Now, 50 years later, Acting Surgeon General Boris Lushniak has released a new report. His report provides more evidence about smoking tobacco and how it can harm health.
If we're going to work together to achieve a society free of tobacco-related disease, this must be understood.
The report urges increased use of tobacco control measures. The suggested controls include raising prices of cigarettes and expanding bans on smoking in enclosed spaces. The 2014 report calls for research on whether lowering the amount of nicotine in cigarettes could help people stop smoking. It also contains new findings.
Today we know that smoking is a cause of diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, and poor response to treatment of arthritis, erectile dysfunction, an increased risk of tuberculosis, disease, and death. We're adding colon, rectal, and liver cancer to the long list of cancers caused by smoking.
Dr. Lushniak also said smoking suppresses the body's natural defenses for fighting disease. He said this increases a smoker's likelihood of getting an infectious disease. The 2014 report finds that those who do not smoke are at a higher risk for stroke if left unprotected from tobacco smoke. The latest research also shows damage to unborn children. Babies are more likely to be born with cleft palates if the mother smokes. The chemicals in tobacco smoke can have lasting effects on brain development in a fetus. The Surgeon General would like to see more action to keep young people from developing a smoking habit. He supports higher prices on cigarettes, more anti-smoking media campaigns, and more help for people who want to quit smoking. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. hear how drinking too many soft drinks may affect children's behavior. Anna Mateo has the story.
A new study has found evidence of aggressive behavior in children who drink 4 or more servings of soft drinks every day. Information for the study came from the mothers of 3,000 5-year-olds. Researchers asked the women to keep a record of how many servings of soft drinks their children drank over a 2-month period. The women were also asked to complete a checklist of their children's behavior. The researchers found that 43% of the boys and girls drank at least 1 daily serving of soda. 4% of the youngsters had 4 or more sodas to drink every day. Shakira Sulia is with Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health in New York City. She worked on the study with researchers from the University of Vermont and Harvard University School of Public Health. She says they found that children who drank the most soda were more than 2 times as likely as those who drank no soda to show signs of aggression.
For the children who consumed 4 or more soft drinks per day, we see an association between aggressive behaviors, attention problems, and withdrawn behaviors.
The aggressive behaviors included destroying possessions belonging to others, taking part in fights, and physically attacking people. Shakira Sulia says the researchers identified the link after they considered sociodemographic factors like the child's age and sex. They also considered other possible influences, such as whether the boys and girls were eating sweets or given fruit drinks on a normal day. In addition, the researchers examined parenting styles and other social conditions that might be taking place in the home. Dr. Sulia says it is not clear why young children who drink a lot of soda have behavior problems.
We can't prove that this is a direct cause-effect relationship. Having said that, there are a lot of ingredients in soda, a lot of ingredients that have not been examined in relation to behavior.
A substance often found in soft drinks is caffeine, which helps to make people feel energized. Dr. Sulia suggests that caffeine could be causing the 5-year-olds to be more aggressive. The research is part of a larger study called the Fragile Families and Child Well-Being Study. It follows 5,000 poor mothers and their children in 20 American cities. Earlier studies of young adults have found the highest sugar levels in those who carry weapons and show signs of negative social behavior. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Be sure to join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. Today, we tell about horse expressions. In the past, many people depended on horses for transportation, farming, and other kinds of work. A lot of people still like to ride horses, and horse racing is also popular. So it is not surprising that Americans still use expressions about the animals. Long ago, people who were rich or important rode horses that were very tall. Today, if a girl acts like she is better than everyone else, you might say she should get off her high horse. Yesterday, my children wanted me to take them to the playground, but I had to finish my work, so I told them to hold your horses. Wait until I finish what I am doing. My two boys like to compete against each other and play in a violent way. I always tell them to stop horsing around or someone could get hurt. We live in a small town. It does not have any exciting activities to offer visitors. My children call it a one-horse town. Last night, I got a telephone call while I was watching my favorite television show. I decided not to answer it because wild horses could not drag me away from the television. There was nothing that could stop me from doing what I wanted to do. Sometimes you get information straight from the horse's mouth. It comes directly from the person who knows most about the subject and is the best source. Let us say your teacher tells you there is going to be a test tomorrow. You could say you got the information straight from the horse's mouth. However, you would not want to call your teacher a horse. You may have heard this expression. You can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make him drink. That means you can give someone advice, but you cannot force him to do something he does not want to do. Sometimes a person fights a battle that has been decided, or keeps arguing a question that has been settled. We say this is like beating a dead horse. In politics, a dark horse candidate is someone who is not well known to the public. Sometimes a dark horse unexpectedly wins an election. Another piece of advice is do not change horses in midstream. You would not want to get off one horse and onto another in the middle of a river, or make major changes in an activity that has already begun. In the past, this expression was used as an argument to re-elect a president, especially during a time when the country was at war. This VOA Special English program was written by Shelley Gullist. I'm Faith Lapidus. You can find more words and their stories at our website, voaspecialenglish.com. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Steve Ember with People in America in VOA Special English. Today we tell about Bessie Coleman, the first African-American woman pilot.
Bessie Coleman was born in Atlanta, Texas, in 1892. Her mother was African American. Her father was part African American and part American Indian. Her family was poor. Bessie had to walk more than 6 kilometers to go to school. When she was 9 years old, her father left the family to search in Oklahoma for the territory of his Indian ancestors. In Texas, then, as in most areas of the American South, black people were treated unfairly. They lived separately from white people and established their own religious, business, and social traditions. Bessie was proud of her race. She learned that from her hard-working and religious mother.
Bessie had to pick cotton and wash clothes to help earn money for her family. She was able to save a little money and went to college in the state of Oklahoma. She was in college only 1 year. She had to leave because she did not have enough money to complete her studies. But during that year, she learned about flying. She read about the first flight of the Wright brothers and the first American female pilot, Harriet Quimby. Bessie often thought about what it would feel like to fly like a bird.
When she was 23, Bessie Coleman moved to Chicago, Illinois, to live with 2 of her older brothers. There, she worked at several jobs. But she wanted to do something more important. She heard stories from pilots who were returning from World War I. She decided she was going to learn how to fly airplanes. She soon found this to be almost impossible. What flight school would admit a black woman? She found that, apparently, there were none in the United States. Bessie learned that she would have a better chance in Europe. She began to study French at a language school in Chicago. She also took a higher-paying job supervising a public eating place so she could save money.
Soon after the end of World War I, Bessie Coleman left for France. She attended the famous flight school, École d'Aviation des Frères Caudron, in the town of Le Courtois in northern France. She learned to fly in a plane that had 2 sets of wings, one over the other. She completed 7 months of flight training. Coleman earned her international permit to fly in 1921 from the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale in France. She became the first black woman ever to earn an international pilot's license.
Coleman returned to Chicago. She was the only black female pilot in the United States. So her story became popular in African American newspapers. She was asked by the Dallas Express newspaper in Texas why she wanted to fly. She said that women and blacks must have pilots if they are to keep up with the times. She added, "Do you know you have never lived until you have flown?" Coleman soon learned that it was difficult for anyone to earn enough money as a pilot to live. she knew she would have to improve her flying skills and learn to do more tricks in the air if she wanted to succeed. There still was no one willing to teach her in Chicago, so she returned to Europe in 1922. She completed about 4 more months of flight training with French and German pilots.
Coleman returned to New York, where she gave her first public flying performance in the United States. A large crowd of people gathered to watch her. She rolled the plane, and she stopped the engine and then started it again just before the plane landed. The crowd loved her performance. So did other crowds as she performed in towns and cities across the country. Bessie Coleman had proved she could fly, yet she wanted to do more. She hoped to establish a school for black pilots in the United States. She knew she needed a plane of her own. She traveled to Los Angeles, California, where she sought the support of a company that sold tires. The company helped her buy a Curtiss JN4 airplane, commonly called a Jenny. In return, she was to represent the company at public events.
Bessie Coleman organized an air show in Los Angeles, but the Jenny's engine stopped soon after takeoff, and the plane crashed to the ground. Coleman suffered a broken leg and other injuries. She regretted the accident and felt she had disappointed her supporters. She sent a message, "Tell them all that as soon as I can walk, I'm going to fly." Coleman returned to Chicago, where she continued her plan to open a flying school. She had very little money, no job, and no plane, yet she opened an office in Chicago. She soon found it was impossible to keep the office open without more financial support, so she decided to return to flying.
In 1925, Bessie Coleman traveled to her home state of Texas. The former cotton picker and beauty technician now was the only licensed black woman pilot in the world. She could speak French, and she was an international traveler.
To earn money, Bessie Coleman gave speeches and showed films of her flights. She did this in churches, theaters, and at local all-black public schools. She organized more air shows. She soon had enough money to pay for some of the cost of a plane of her own, another old Curtiss Jenny. She continued her speeches and air shows in the state of Georgia, then in Florida. She hoped to earn enough money to open her school. In Florida, Coleman met Edwin Beeman, whose father was the head of a huge chewing gum company. Mr. Beeman gave her the money to make the final payment on her plane in Dallas. Coleman made plans to have it flown to her in Jacksonville, Florida. A young white pilot, William Wills, made the trip. But the old Jenny had problems. Wills had to make 2 stops during the short flight to repair the plane. Local pilots who examined the plane were surprised he had been able to fly it so far.
On April 30, 1926, Coleman was preparing for an air show in which she would star. She agreed to make the flight with William Wills. He flew the plane so she could clearly see the field she would fly over. She did not use any safety devices, such as a seat belt or parachute. they would have prevented her from leaning over to see all of the field. During the flight, the plane's controls became stuck. The plane turned over in the air. Nothing was holding Coleman in. She fell more than a kilometer to her death. Wills had worn a seat belt, but he also died when the plane crashed. Officials later found the cause of the accident. A tool had slid into the controls of the plane. Experts said that the accident would not have happened if Wills and Coleman had been flying a newer and safer plane.
Throughout her life, Bessie Coleman had resisted society's restrictions against blacks and women. She believed that the air is the only place where everyone is free. She wanted to teach other black people about that special environment. It took some time until her wish was fulfilled. It was not until 1939 that black students were permitted to enter civilian flight schools in the United States. It was not until the Second World War that black male pilots were sent into battle. And it was not until 1980 that the first black women completed military pilot training in the United States.
Bessie Coleman did not live to establish her own flying school. But she had said that if she could create the minimum of her plans and desires, she would have no regrets. She had accepted the dangers of her job because she loved flying. Her influence continues today. In 1992, the Chicago City Council passed a resolution praising her. It said, "Bessie Coleman continues to inspire untold thousands, even millions of young persons, with her sense of adventure, her positive attitude, and her determination to succeed." In 1934, Lieutenant William Powell wrote a book called Black Wings. He wrote, "Because of Bessie Coleman, we have overcome that which was much worse than racial barriers. We have overcome the barriers within ourselves and dared to dream."
This program was written by Vivian Chikarian. It was produced by Lawan Davis. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.